Blog Talk Radio.
Let me tell you about something new. A new show called G's Power.
G's Power.
Real talk for real saints.
Are you ready?
And it's for real.
Welcome to G's Power Hour, live every weekday at 11:30 a.m. on Never Had It So Good Entertainment Network. Your host, G, will bring you informative and entertaining guests and a variety of topics in a way that you can absorb and enjoy. Listen in weekdays and call in at 516-387-1944. We love interaction. All shows can be downloaded if you miss one or found on iTunes the next day. G's Power Hour is powered by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network.
G's Power Hour.
Yeah.
Well, good morning, brothers and sisters, kings and queens, angels and saints, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. And to our veterans out there, we want to wish you a happy Veterans Day. We salute you. We thank you. And I know the phrase has gotten a little trite these days, but we do thank you for your service. We thank you for your sacrifice. And not just, you know, if you're on the battlefield. It's a being in the military is a whole change of lifestyle, not the norm. And a lot of people don't understand it. And you've taken the time to make some sacrifices on a personal level as well as professional, and we are appreciative of that, so thank you. One of the things that a lot of our veterans, when they come home or they get out of service, is they benefit from the use of a good caregiver. But what is that? And so we're going to talk a little bit about not just for the servicemen, for in general, we're going to talk about caregiving. And today we are blessed to have with us Dr. Cynthia J. Hickman and the Black Book of Important Information for Caregivers is her book. Good morning, Dr. Hickman. How are you?
Good morning, Ms. Gretchen. I'm doing well. Thank you so much for this opportunity.
Oh, well, thanks so much for taking the time out and giving us a little bit of insight into what caregiving is and why, you know, tell us a little bit about you, what you do, and then give us some insight in terms of why you felt it was important to put this book out there.
Sure. So, again, as you mentioned, I'm Dr. Cynthia J. Hickman. I'm coined your proactive caregiver advocate, and that came about from my 20-year journey of taking care of my mom. My mother came to live with me in 1977. She died 4 years ago at the age of 97. My siblings often say my mother lived a long life because of the care that I gave her. But part, it was because I knew that I needed to give back to my family, as we all should, as caregivers. So my journey began, as I mentioned, in 77. But before that, I'm a registered nurse by profession. I've been a nurse since 1985. And being a nurse, of course, I had an opportunity to do all types of nursing problems, disease processes, and so on and so forth. So I was able to navigate taking care of mom at home. Mom had very few hospitalizations because I was a nurse and had a mindset and understanding of how to take care of someone. So I was able to keep things under control in the home without having hospitalizations. So as I stated, my mom died in 2017. And in my grief, I kept trying to figure out how I was going to get over that. And one of the things that occurred to me was the journey of taking care of her might help someone else. So the Black Book of Important Information for Caregivers actually is my second book. My first book, From the Lens of Daughter, Nurse, and Caregiver, A Journey of Duty and Honor. And I wrote that book as a healing of myself for taking care of the matriarch of our family. So that's where the caregiving journey started in real form. Now, the difference is when you're in the hospital, Ms. Gretchen, you get a chance to go home after taking care of your patients. When you're caregiving in the home, home is home, You don't get to go home. You are home. So my journey became very different because I now had someone in my home who I was taking care of, and it was totally different than going to a hospital setting and leaving. I subsequently had to retire in 2013. I actually retired, Gretchen, on my mother's birthday, August 13th, 2013, to take care of her full time. So that's where the journey started, and it did full circle from my experience of being a nurse to being an informal caregiver, which is what we call ourselves in the home, which is what you see in society now. Caregivers are informal because they're not paid for what they do. They give up their time and their self. So that's how it started. I have a PhD in health services with a background in leadership. I have a master's in nursing education, and now I do teach nursing part-time to nursing students, and I have a bachelor in nursing science. So that's my educational background. And all that framed me to be a caregiver in the home. My final years at the hospital, I became an acute care case manager, so I was able to understand discharge planning, utilization management, how to speak with doctors, how to educate patients and families. And so all that transferred home to take care of my mom.
How do you start the conversation about caregiving? You know, I mean, it really doesn't enter your mind as long as the person is well and moving about and, you know, living life, you know, the way that we're accustomed to that person living. But then, you know, or you're living your life according to what you think, and you probably think, oh, I'm not going to ever need that. But at some point, you might. And at some point, you might be the one also having to provide the caregiving. When should that conversation start, and how do you begin that conversation?
You begin that conversation by asking people to be observant. One of the things that occurred as being a nurse, which might have framed me for being a caregiver, is we were taught to pay attention to subjective and objective observations. So what that says is you look at the picture that you're in and you pay attention to things that occur. Now, I say that because when you think about our parents, well, let's even take it to our children. Our children were babies at one point. And as they started growing, what if the first thing they started doing? They tried to crawl, and they started trying to walk, and when they would try to walk, they would fall. I tell people, think about the circle of life, and where in that circle of life should you start paying attention? I now say we should have this conversation in elementary schools and in high schools. Because this is the population who are stuck on themselves right now. They're living their life like it's golden, and they're not paying attention to their surroundings. So I made the suggestion the other day about your grandchildren giving granny a glass of water, or your middle-aged child helping granny put their socks on, or helping how to put the dishes away. Things that start showing a caring process is how you start having the conversation. And then I say, if you're 20 years old, Ms. Gretchen, probably 40. If you're 40 years old, your parents are probably 60. What does the picture look like? And what has gone on between the 20 and the 40 and the 40 and the 60? Do they wear glasses? Are they using a cane? Do they wear hearing aids? Have they had a hospitalization? And if they did, what do you know about it? And how would you possibly need to manage that if that was something that you needed to manage? So you start making people have a heightened awareness of the things that are around them, their parents' environment, and even your environment, because if your parents have to come live with you, you might have throw rugs all over your house. To an elderly person or someone who has a disability who's using adaptive aids, for example, that's a safety hazard where someone could trip and fall. So I say in one of my blogs, actually, take the blinders off and see what you see, because it's truly happening. What color was their hair when you met them? What color is her hair now? How fast do you used to walk? My mother fell. That was the first sign that she needed adaptive aids. Now, I ignored it because I said, oh, everybody falls. But when she fell a second time, it was now time. So the writing was on the wall. I might have not wanted to pay attention to it, but the writing was on the wall. And my mother used to say, there's a leak in my building, and one day I'm going to move. And I just kind of like, what kind of conversation is that? But I didn't think about it in the thought of, she's talking about leaving here one day. And, of course, none of us want to hear that. So observation is very key. And we have to start going back to a proactive mindset of paying attention.
Yeah, I hear you, because I remember for myself, after my father passed, and I was sitting in a coffee shop bookstore with my mom, and we just, you know, chatting and stuff like that. And she's always actually been kind of up front telling me, you know, what medications she was on, where certain papers were kept, and things that she wanted. But she took for granted, because I was the only child, that she wasn't going to have to put a lot of stuff in writing.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were having this conversation in the bookstore, and she referred to a past incident that included us, but she referred to me in the third person.
Mm.
You know, she instead of saying, you did whatever it was, she said, Gretchen did, you know, whatever. And it caught my attention. And I know in my family there is a little mental illness. So we, you know, this was just knowledge and stuff like that. But, you know, it's like, okay, you know, maybe, you know, you want to think about doing a living will. Maybe you want to think about power of attorney or whatever. But she didn't feel it was necessary because it was just me.
Mm-hmm.
But it is necessary, as we came to find out, where, you know, she's not necessarily wanting to sign papers or able to sign papers. I'm the only one there now because my father's gone to sign papers. But you can't sign papers because you don't have power of attorney.
You don't have power of attorney, absolutely. You're right, and
yeah.
You brought that up. It's an excellent point, because that's where the second book came from. My mother did an amazing job of preparation. You know, in the olden days, Mama had policies from JCPenney's, from Montgomery Ward, from Sears and Roebuck. You know, they had insurance policies. If you buy a hot water heater, they'd say, buy an insurance policy. And she
mm-hmm.
had all these really these $5, $10 policies, but over the years, they meant something. But older people prepared because they had life insurance policies and they knew what to do with them. What we're dealing
right.
with now and today is a conversation that we need to go back to, because that still is not broken. That has fixed burying somebody, understanding that you need somebody who's in charge of things because it was necessary.
Mm-hmm.
I had four sisters. My mother lived in Ohio, which is how she ended up with me, because in Toledo, Ohio, houses had basements, and mother would go up and down the basement steps for washer and dryer and the hot water tank. And over time, when her knees got bad, that was not an option. So she moved
mm-hmm.
to Texas. But what everybody saw the same picture. You know, everybody was looking at mama getting older and who's going to make the first move. And before
mm-hmm.
something would occur, like a fall down a flight of basement stairs, narrative needed to change. So we acted upon that narrative, because it's important. So when mother came to live with me, the first thing she said, well, I got two houses in Ohio, and she gave me this whole laundry list. And the first thing I said to her, I said, Mama, I cannot manage two properties 5,000 miles away. I'm not doing it. So she subsequently sold her houses to my older sisters, so we didn't have that as an issue. And as she got
mm-hmm.
older, we started changing things over to me. We got our power of attorneys. We got our things notarized. We got our bank accounts in order, because the other thing that people don't know, and this is in the Black Book of Important Information for Caregivers, is when you start handling financial aspects for your loved one, if your name is not on a bank account, savings account, whatever accounts that they have, you don't have access to their money. So that becomes very important. So I encourage people that are caregivers to please check the documents. Make sure that your name's on documents where you can handle information in their stead. The other thing that occurred is the insurance policies. Who are the beneficiaries? Because the names need to be there. And should someone die who is a beneficiary, someone needs to get that fixed right away. Because the other way, it's just another whole court issue that just goes on and on and on. So there's a lot of things that people don't think about until they have to react. And so my role and goal is to help people be proactive. Put things in place before you need them, because when you're stressed, anxiety, death, and grief, you can't think through these things.
Right, exactly. We are here today. I'm sorry. We're going to take a quick break. We are here today with Dr. Cynthia J. Hickman, author of Black Book of Important Information for Caregivers. This is G's Power Hour. I've never had it so good entertainment. If you have questions, the number is 516-387-1944. G's Power Hour. I've never had it so good entertainment. We'll be right back.
Over the past 60 years, Dove Beauty Bar's superior formula has remained unchanged. But when it comes to beauty, everything changed. Together, we redefined beauty. We said no to stereotypes and yes to every type. We let go of judgments and embraced what makes us unique. We're proud to have been there with you, caring for you every step of the way. Here's to the next 60 years.
Having a wedding, reception, family reunion, planning a banquet, or some other fundraising event. Need to share your knowledge through a workshop or seminar, or it's a difficult time and you need to plan a wake or repast. Let us help. At our gatherings, let us reduce the stress and make the occasion memorable, treasured. Call our gatherings at 407-968-9387 or email ourgatherings@yahoo.com. Let us help plan your special event.
Good morning. Welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. We are discussing the issue of caregiving. We're here with Dr. Cynthia J. Hickman, who is the author of the Black Book of Important Information for Caregivers. The number, if you have questions for her, is 516-387-1944. So, yeah, Dr. Hickman, I was just, you know, thinking about, you know, what you were saying and, you know, having property and everything. Now fortunately, I guess in a way, if you want to say fortunate, but about 6 months after my father passed, my mother decided to move. She, you know, we had discussed the possibility anyway of her moving in with my husband and I anyway, so she did that. She sold her home, and she got rid of her insurance policies and took the money. Well, she got rid of most of them. I found out she had a little one, I guess, for about $16 or something. But, you know, at her age, it was like she was almost 80, and, you know, buying an insurance, continuing to pay on an insurance policy really wasn't doing her any good at that point. And she decided she was going to go ahead and pay for her funeral expenses and everything. And so by the time she did pass, she had taken care of almost everything except for, let's say, the repast and the fact that she had lost so much weight. So the dress that she bought for her funeral, for her own funeral, didn't fit. We had to get her another dress. But she had taken care of everything. And I always say that was a blessing for me and, you know, for us. And so some of the things that you were talking about in terms of, like, insurance policies have to be looked at regularly to see, I think, when they may be no longer beneficial. Maybe there's another way to handle, you know, caregiving and end-of-life issues.
Right. So, Ms. Gretchen, with insurance policies, one of the things that people don't realize is buying policies that you pay up. And once you pay them up, then they live on their dividends. Those are types of policies that my mother had, which was so amazing. Because once they were paid up 20 years, 25 years, whatever the cutoff was for them, then the insurance policies actually started making money on themselves. So one of the things that used to always distress me with my mother was every quarter she would call me. Mother had a bell that she would ring for us to come and see about her. And once a quarter, my mother would call, oh, my God, the bell. And bless her heart, we buried it with the bell, too, because I said if I heard that bell one more time, I'd scream. But actually, I would love to hear it every day, all day, right now. But she would call, and once a quarter, she would say, get the black box, get the green box, because we need to look at the policies and make sure A, B, C, E, F, G. And when she would do that, I would just get so distressed. So, oh, Mama's seeing Jesus, and she ain't telling me. She wanted to make sure things were in place. But the one thing that she did was had policies that were paid up. So they had an exit as far as you paying on a monthly bill. So when Mother's policies were over, she had dividends once a year. It actually dropped on her birthday every year. And by the time her policy was ready to be used, it had over, I don't know, $6,000 over what it was. So that's what the old people did. And I want us to start having that conversation so that people don't have policies that they pay until they die. You know, these term policies are good, and those are the ones that you use. You have a policy that you pay until you no longer can pay. That's not the type of insurance policy that you have. So then they need to have maintenance to call insurance companies and ask about them. Do they need to be updated? Do the beneficiaries need to be changed in case someone's on there where somebody has passed? But those are things that people don't talk about because death is difficult to talk about. End of life is difficult to talk about. But we have to talk about it because otherwise we will continue to see crowdfunding type programs. And if you don't have any friends, your crowd ain't going to bury you. You're going to be over there waiting. So we need to start educating our young people about insurance policies. Get them on your job. Get one outside of your job. Do term policies so when they're paid for, you still have them. Let people know you have them. Let people know where they are. And keep in mind also that insurance policies change names. And that's why you have to consistently check on them. You know, it might be National 1 year and Prudential the next year. Somebody bought somebody out, you know, that story. So it's very important that we put insurance policies back in people's life because that's what the old people did, and it worked. And it wasn't broke. And so there's nothing we need to fix. We just need to educate from financial literacy prospects. So these are the things that we need to do, long-term care programs for people who they may benefit. Everybody is not a beneficiary of a good long-term program, but these things that we need to talk about because it's important. When you look at the Black Book, Ms. Gretchen, several things were in the book that I wrote because I wanted other people to be mindful of. Let's go back briefly to being a caregiver in the home. What's important in the home for yourself and your village? Important phone numbers should be visible in the home. I had them plastered on my mother's bedroom door. I had phone numbers on the refrigerator because if I drop dead, the party need to keep going.
Right.
And people need to know what the party, what we're bringing to the party, not just me. So we have to look at our village and who's a part of that village in case they need to pick up where I left off. So medical phone numbers of doctors, hospitals, specialties were all visible in my home. My sister's phone numbers, my children's phone numbers were all visible in my home because they needed to know who they needed to call if ever they needed to call someone. step one. The second part of this process, we just mentioned about insurance policies, but vital information cannot be seeking and finding when you need them. Where's mom's
right.
social security number? Where's mom's birth certificate? Where's military papers in case you need them? Where's your mortgage information in case you need it? Where's your end-of-life policies, your end-of-life plan, your notarized plan? They need to be in one spot because no one needs to be looking for these things when you need them. That's a reactive mindset. And I'm saying please get them out ahead of time. We talked briefly before about banking information. Beneficiary names need to be on bank accounts, savings accounts, stocks, bonds, or whatever someone may have, because if you need to operate in that loved one's stead, your name has to be present.
Right.
Otherwise, you're not going to be able to do it.
Safety deposit boxes, too. And the reason I say that is because my mom never took my father off their safety deposit box. Now, I had a key. I had a key. She gave me a key. And I went with her every time she went. But when she had a stroke and I'm looking for papers, fortunately I ended up remembering where she actually had her her final paperwork was with her cardiologist. But, you know, but it, when she had her stroke, it was a holiday weekend. And, you know,
when
there were places
closed,
that
going
were
home, right?
closed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Certain places were closed.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, other places is like, you know, you had to kind of wait. And when someone's in a really dire situation, waiting is not usually an option. You know, so
absolutely
those are
not
things
an option.
Think about.
Right.
But I still never did get access to her safety deposit box.
You never did?
No.
Did you go? Did you do a probate court application?
No, I did not, and I didn't think to do that because everything else, including her bank account, it just so happened I was a beneficiary on a bank account, and I had helped her do business on her actual bank account. So mostly everything else was dealt with. It was just this one issue with the safety deposit box, and we wrongly associated with the bank account that the safety deposit box was going to be included in everything else that I was able to do. It was not.
Mm-hmm. It was not. Well, if you still have an option, if you still have government ID of your mom, the paperwork that you had mentioned previously, you can start a probate to try to get access to it by showing them you have her power of attorney, you have her government ID that you operated in her stead. You can go to court and fill out applications for a probate to try to get that back.
Okay.
So it's just a thought if you want to consider it, because that is one way. Now, I almost found myself in that situation with one of Mama's insurance policies because it was from her when my mother was an educator. She taught school for 30 years in Toledo, Ohio. And there was a policy that she had with all four of our names on it. And even though I was a power of attorney, the insurance company did not want to talk to me. I had to send forms to all of my sisters to fill out. They had to complete and all of that. Then we had to collect all those pieces of paper. They had to go back to the insurance company along with my power of attorney, my notarized documents before they would release those funds.
Wow.
But this is information that is so necessary because in the middle of grief, none of this comes into play in your brain. You're grieving. You're not thinking about any of this. And the other thing that I was so blessed to have, I was on a nursing conference, but before I left, I was so fearful to leave thinking Mom would pass before I got back. And the hospice nurse said, go, we'll take care of her, not to worry. But one of the things that the hospice nurse said, well, have you called a funeral home? And when he first said that, I'm thinking, well, you might need to just go now because that was not a question I needed to hear while I'm getting ready to go out of town. But when I thought about it, I thought, it's painful, but let me see. So I had a friend who knew a funeral director, and so I called him, and he said, Dr. Hickman, don't you worry about a thing. He says, I'm going to come check on your mom every day. I'm going to call your sisters every day. I'm going to check on her while you're gone so you can be assured that she's going to be in the best hand. Do you know he did that?
Wow.
He did that. The funeral director did that. Now, you know, you can think, well, yeah, he was doing it because he saw money coming. You know, but mom actually didn't die for 6-7 months later, whatever it was. But it wasn't that.
Right.
But he was so earnest in his passion for what he did. He saw the need that me getting away. He saw the need that I needed some feeling of safe and security between the hospice nurse, the family, him. And he had a wealth of resources of people if he needed to call somebody. And he said, I'll even pay for it. I want you to go and do what you need to do. You have this presentation you have to give on a national level. You must go. And he took care of me. So we need to have in our list of phone numbers a funeral home director.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have thought about it had I not gone through it with mom. But it really made a big difference. It really made a big difference. So insurance, legal documents, you need to have them in your person. And this is about marriage license, divorce license, medical, military information, because all these things come into play when someone passes. Ms. Gretchen, you won't believe this. My friend in Ohio married a man who had been married 3 times before. She married him thinking he was divorced from all these people. Come to find out that he never divorced from any of these people, and she didn't get a dime of anything.
Oh, wow.
The first wife who he married, had his children by, was beneficiary of everything he had. And do you think she cared that he had wife number three? She had to bury him because she had the policy, and she kept the money because she was the beneficiary. She didn't like the man, so she wasn't about to bury the man. And she kept all the insurance money because she she was a beneficiary. You know, you can cash in, do what you want with it. The funeral homes, if you have policies, will work it for you. You don't have to even worry yourself with that if you have policies. The funeral home that took care of my mom, I didn't have to do anything but give him my dad's military papers so mom could be buried in a military cemetery. He took care of everything else. So it's good to have one of those people in your space, however painful it might be.
For sure. We are going to take a quick break. We are here with Dr. Cynthia J. Hickman. The Black Book of Important Information for Caregivers is her book. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment, and we will be right back.
This is Douglas Dobbs of Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service. We have served the Central Florida community for 29 years with quality funeral and cremation services. Honoring all religions and faiths, we have been here for many grieving families. Whether it's a complete funeral service with a burial or a simple, dignified cremation, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service is here for you. Located at 430 North Kirkman Road at the 408 Expressway, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service, 407-578-7720. Dobbs, dedicated to serving our families.
Hi, I'm Tim Garris. You may know me as Timmy G. Yeah, I know. It's been 2 decades, but I want you to know I'm back in the arc with you. And I've got a mix of music that can help you relax and chill out. It's smooth. It's relaxing. It's chill out jazz. The soulful mix of smooth jazz, soul, and smooth R&B. So join me every Wednesday night, 10 p.m. to midnight, on K-Ham Radio.
Are you chillin'?
Good afternoon. Welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. Again, happy Veterans Day to all of the veterans out there who have sacrificed their life and time and lifestyle to give service to our country. We really appreciate what you have done. And don't forget, you guys got a lot of freebies today. I'm trying to get my husband to go pick up that hot dog from 7-Eleven that I really don't need. But anyway. Anyway, we're talking caregiving today, and we are here with Dr. Cynthia J. Hickman.
And she is talking, one of the things I wanted to ask you about, Dr. Hickman, and by the way, I'm posting Dr. Hickman's information on the G's Power Hour Facebook page. And if you have a question for her, the number is 516-387-1944. What do people falsely assume about caregiving, Dr. Hickman?
That it's only related to bathing, baths, food, and those bedtime shenanigans. That's the mindset of most people when you hear the word caregiving. You're going to brush their teeth, you're going to comb their hair, you're going to give them a bath, you're going to put on their clothes, and then you're going to put them to bed at some point in time. They don't think about the holistic aspect of a caregiver. And I say that because when you talk about the physical aspect of caregiving, people don't realize the stress and strain of that. So we look at it as being the doings. Like we get up in the morning, put it on yourself. You get up in the morning, you brush your teeth, you comb your hair, you put your clothes on, and you go about your day. Now you're putting that on a person that you're caring for. That is not as easy as people think. Because if someone who's not able to motivate on their own, get up on their own, go to the bathroom on their own, you're lifting a lot of weight oftentimes, and it's a very hard strain on a caregiver. So they look at it from the physical, mental aspect, but they don't look at it from the emotional and important information aspect. And as a result, when you hear people talk about caregivers who are burned out and stressed, it's because we work so hard to care for our loved ones, because the goal is to keep them in their home as long as we can, as much as we can, because when you make them go into nursing facilities, you're kind of out of the loop as far as their care. So when you think about the caregiving and why it's so challenging, it's because we look at it from the physical aspect, and I'm asking people to look at it from the holistic aspect so that you know that it's not necessarily all about the activities of daily living, but that's where people often think of caregiving, and that's why you hear a lot of conversation about stress, burnout, and anxiety, because the physical toll of caregiving, it weighs so hard on people. And when that occurs, you see a lot of elder abuse, you see a lot of verbal abuse, because people are strained and they don't know how to ask for help to get out of that situation. So I want people to not look at caregiving as the physical part of the role, because that's a given. That's a given. And then if you have someone who you have to do everything head to toe, someone who's immobile or who's had a stroke and they don't have the ability to move their limbs around, and you do all that for them. And the physical toll changes the mindset of a caregiver. Does that make sense?
There's a lot to take in and a lot to just, you know, try to figure out how to manage with caregiving and just, so the book is a really good asset to have in, I guess you could say, the arsenal. What other things would you suggest a person who may ultimately end up being before I go to that, I want to, because I'm going to ask you what things, other things they should have in their arsenal. How do you get, I guess you could say, older people or people who are a little bit old school, where, you know, it was the children are seen but not heard type of thing, or you didn't reveal a lot of stuff to children, or even not even children, you just didn't put your business out there for a whole bunch of people to know. How do you get them to share information?
You know, that is an interesting conversation, actually, because if you recall, in the olden days, there were lots of secrets,
mm-hmm.
and old folks didn't talk about them,
nope.
and you didn't know about them, Nope. And it's funny that my oldest sister's now doing this ancestry thing and looking for people and finding stuff and finding information. And she said to me just the other day, "Now I know why we didn't know nothing. There was too many secrets." and nobody was telling the secret. And she made the comment, "We're trying to find our grandfather, and we can't find a burial record for our grandfather. And we're trying to figure it out."
Mm-hmm.
And she said, then she got some kind of link to something and found out that we don't know about him because somebody else had him before Granny had him, but that was a secret. And I said, "Oh, no, I don't want to hear." I said, "Don't tell me nothing else. I don't want to hear. Granddad was granddad. I ain't know him, but okay. Don't tell me nothing else. I don't want to know about the secrets." But the reality of it is we have to start being transparent. Now, for the older people, it was a little different for me because Mother didn't hide things from us. We knew, you know, we knew what was going on. But for older people who are in that arena, it really boils down to trust. Remember when nobody wanted to put the money in the bank? Why do you think that was in the olden days? There was no trust. You know, which one of the children did they like the best? When you figured out that they got all the goodies, when there's 40 kids in the family and only one got all the goods, that's because Mom only trusted one person. So really you have to break down that wall of letting people know that you empathize with them, you're there to help them, you're trying to serve them, and you have to have that conversation as people age. And then, of course, with dementia, those type of conditions where it's hard for the person to even trust you or understand what you're saying, that becomes a bit more challenging. So, again, you have to start having these conversations earlier. You know, typically you don't see a person at 20 with dementia. But if there's a history in the family of these type of conditions, then that should alert you that maybe these kind of conversations need to be had around the ice cream or the coffee bowl or the something. And it can start off fun. You know, let's play a game. You know, how many siblings did you have? Because I didn't find out till early in my, you know, 40s, I guess. You know, Mom had a sister that we didn't know that she had that died in birth. My sister found that during her, during her shenanigans. But that was not anything anybody talked about because I guess she died at birth. She was very young. Nobody really knew her. And maybe Granny didn't want nobody to know she had. I don't know. Could have been a secret. Who knows? But it's interesting to know she found a little marker at the cemetery of this child that belonged to my grandmother. So I say that just to say that, you know, time out for the secrets. I think we're at a stage where we need to be transparent to help each other. Now, you have to know the difference between somebody who cares about you or trying to get your stuff. They've shown that many times before someone needed them. So you just know that's not someone you deal with. So transparency is, I would say, the first step to helping elderly people understand that you're there to help them. I tell my mother she would never go to a nursing home, and she didn't, and she wouldn't, because she didn't put me in a nursing home at 10 or 5 or 2 months, and that was not going to be an option. Now, did I know what the challenges were going to be? No, I didn't. But I was ready for the journey because that was, I felt, my obligation to someone that took care of me.
So yeah, my mother briefly went to an assisted living facility, and it was her choice. And, you know, I helped her look for one and everything, and we found one. And it worked for a little while, but her dementia was starting to get more severe, and they had a limited amount of space where where they were taking care of people with Alzheimer's and dementia, and they didn't have any room for her right then. And it unfortunately was a situation where they were saying, you need to come stay with her, which that didn't make any sense, staying with her in the assisted living facility, and I'm married, or you're going to have to take her home. And I couldn't really explain to her why she had to come back home. And in her eyes, it looked as if I was doing something against her.
Right. And with that particular disease process, Ms. Gretchen, There's no rationalization in that, and I think one of the frustrating parts about dementia and Alzheimer's is just this little bitty moment of rationalization. But for the most part, they're inside itself wanting to tell you what's going on, but however the disease process affects the brain, the neurons, the processes of that that disease, they're not able to. So, it's like you just can't blame them. There's no way into a person with those types of diseases. You just have to operate in their space the best you can. And there's days when you have to be aggressive. There's days when you can be calm. There's days when you have to close the door and don't let them out. All those things that seem so harsh and painful, but for safety's sake it's necessary, for your sake it's necessary. But at the end of the day, being organized to decrease the stresses that are associated with caregiving, it's no one fits all. Every health condition, every process is very individualized, and that's why sometimes your challenges are so great. But I will say the biggest picture of it all is to be organized. Planning your day, even though it might be disruptive, but planning your day is very important. The other thing I didn't mention is there are support services all across the globe that people won't tap into for an array of reasons, but they're there. The Area of Aging is an organization around the globe that can start you on a journey of helping. Also, AARP, it's been around for many, many years. It's a great resource to start you on your journey. And then I'll also say, identify your village early and know that your village is coming to you with their own gifts and talents, not what you want them to have, what they have to give. Because that was my mistake oftentimes. When I invited someone in to help me, I had a list. I want you to do this, and I want you to do it this way, this way, and this way. And if they didn't do it this way, then I had an attitude. Or someone would say, well, how can I help you? And I would say, I got a 97-year-old lady here that can't cook, clean, do the laundry, give her a bath, feed herself. Now, what's the question? You know, and I'm just going to wait.
Yeah.
But what happens is you have to realize that everybody that wants to be will be. Because they want to help and support you. So support services are so very important. I want to share my acronym with you, which is what helped me to keep things in order, and I hope to your listeners it will do the same thing for you. Because I want people not to be stressed. I want people not to see burnout coming. Address it before it overtakes you. I have an acronym that I use in my black book of important information for caregivers. The first letter is B. I call it BISC. It's not the soup, but I love that soup. BISC. B-I-S-K.
Okay.
The B stands for be prepared. What does be prepared mean? Be prepared really means, because it's different for every situation, it starts by planning your day. Always have a plan. Knowing that all plans can go awry, but always have a plan. If your plan is cooking breakfast at 9 a.m., even though you might have to heat it up in the microwave, if that's your plan, stick to it. Because once you get a regular plan, you're better. You feel better because you feel accomplished. Because sometimes in the caregiving space, you don't feel accomplished. I had many days like that, Ms. Gretchen. I felt like as a nurse, I was supposed to have it all, do it all, understand it all. And there were days that things caught me off guard. The I stands for important information. You need to have physical documents. I know we're stuck to our technology. But if you drop it in the toilet or the sewer, what you going to do? Cloud and all. So important information is important. And it includes the phone numbers of important people and places. The S stands for support systems, Who are your support systems? Identify them early. Find out their gifts and talents so you know when to call Sally to wash Grandma's hair. Well, you know when to call John to fix the broken step. And K stands for, please know your loved one's wishes. It is the most stressful thing to see people fight over what our loved ones want or don't want because we don't know. So you have that conversation early enough that they can have a conversation with you so you're not trying to figure it out in a reactive manner.
Right.
My goal is to help people be proactive so that they won't fall into that reactive circle, raccoon wheel, that you just end up in distress.
Right. And that was one of the reasons I wanted to ask you about, that, you know, when do you start having these conversations, you know, because it can creep up on you, you know. And the thing about it is it may be a gradual, let's say, illness or condition, or it may be a sudden illness or even an accident, an auto accident or some sort of, you know, like you're talking about falling down the stairs. Some sort of accident that all of a sudden puts you in that position where you have to alter life as you know it and take care of that particular person. Or if you're the person that gets injured, your life is changed and you're having to be dependent. And you're not, that's something that you're not accustomed to.
Absolutely. Yeah. So you have the conversation early. Now, what is early? I said the other day, we need to start going into elementary schools and ask them what they think about caregiving. Go into high schools. Start having a high school project where students have to go into nursing homes or nursing facilities, not to be healthcare practitioners, just for the mindset of we are living in a society where people are getting older and are older. And most of the time what you're seeing now is our elders are outliving their children. And if
and
that happens where we assume, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, please.
While they assume that the children are going to be available, I have a friend now who lost all three of her children to sickle cell anemia. All three of her children. Just so happened two of her kids ended up having children, but the children aren't interested in taking care of her. So she's considered a elder orphan. And so she has to rely on friends to help her navigate what might happen to her. So it's a whole circle of conversations I think that I'm trying to pull to the forefront, Ms. Gretchen, because it's not a month situation. It's ongoing, and we have to always look at it. Because you're right, one fall down the steps could change the trajectory of everything. I quit my job. I had a high paying job. I quit my job to take care of my mother in 2013. A whole income. But all I saw was the care that my mother needed. The money didn't matter. None of that mattered. Now, thank God she had retirement, so it was a cushion for us. But what if that's not even available? So these conversations go back to being prepared. You need policies. You need long-term care plans if that's something that you need. If you're an elder orphan, you certainly need a plan because there's nobody to help you. And you might have friends, but friends only do so much because they're friends. And if you don't put their name on something, they're just your friend.
Right. And you also got to look at caregiving from the perspective that even if you end up putting someone in a nursing home or a rehab facility or something, you are still a caregiver in the sense that you have to, you can't just put them in a nursing home and just leave them there. You have to check on them on a regular basis.
You better show up.
And because the nursing home
and you better show up
to see that someone is interested in the well-being of that person. That's how when you leave them like that, that's how a lot of times
the nursing home residents end up being mistreated, unfortunately.
That's true. But you know what it is? And this is another subject another time. The financial pay for those who are paid caregivers is
mm-hmm.
one of the hugest problems that we need to address. You know, when people say, I had a situation where a nurse said, I'm quitting because they don't pay me enough. And I thought to myself, how much do you pay a nurse? How much really is my
yeah.
knowledge, skills, expertise worth?
Mm-hmm.
When you're dealing with nursing home workers who are paying minimum wage, they have 10 patients that they're supposed to do ABC to, when you think about that, that's ridiculous. And so
mm-hmm.
what you find is them trying to pay their bills and do their job, but in the meantime, they're working under such conditions that they don't feel respected, they don't feel worthy, they feel like a little slave going around and around and around. You know, no one helps them because they're the CNA or the nursing assistant, as if they don't need help from time to time. And so you get this, you get a population of people who don't care. They go to work. It's a job, totally. It's not, their empathy doesn't show up, their concern doesn't show up. They show up for the paycheck, and they operate in that way. So if you don't show up at midnight to see what's going on with Granny, if you don't show up 3 in the afternoon, you don't know what's going on. If you have to use a facility, you must show up.
Definitely, definitely. How can people find your book?
Okay, my book is on Amazon.com and Barnes & Noble. They are also on my website, www.CynthiaJHickman.info, and I would love your support.
So,
I also
and I was going to ask this earlier. In addition to your book, what types of things, and we only got a couple minutes left, what types of things should someone have in their arsenal when they want to be ready to deal with a caregiving situation?
Knowledge, information on the condition of the person, what type of conditions are you dealing with? Is it just aging? Because aging has a whole list of things you need to look at without considering even medical conditions. Medical conditions require doctor's visits, medications, equipment in the home, safety in the home. One of the things I mention a lot of times is throw rugs in people's homes that are elderly. If they're walking with AIDS, need to get rid of the throw rug on the floor because someone could trip and injure themselves. People who
mm-hmm.
are on blood thinners, if they bump furniture that have points, they can bleed in. You find out about it after they pass out and their blood count is 5 when it should be 12 because you can't see it. I teach people how to move your furniture around so people aren't bumping into things. Those type of things are all very important. Phone numbers, emergency numbers are very important. Keep them close by. Identify problems before they become a problem. If you are taking care of someone who has some mobility to move around in your kitchen, for example, where are the dishes? Where are the cups for the coffee that they used to get on their own? What is their, muscle weakness, hand weakness? They reach for a cup and they drop it. They don't have socks on. Socks should have rubber placements under them so they're not slipping and sliding.
Mm-hmm.
Doorknobs.
Okay.
Bathrooms. Maybe lift over the toilet now. So the toilet sometimes for some people is too low. It needs to be lifted up. Just a little
mm-hmm.
bit on and on and on. But really, caregiving is all about problem solving. And problem
yeah.
solving starts with you doing it ahead of time, being proactive, which is what problem solving is about. Because once it's a reactive situation, then it's another story.
Yeah, look into universal design. That's one thing that you definitely have to look into
mm-hmm.
when you're a caregiver.
Mm-hmm.
I hope you are able to come back and do a part two at some point, Dr. Hickman. Really appreciated
Ms.
having
Gretchen.
You today.
Ms. Gretchen, I would love that. You just keep me in the loop, and I would certainly, of course, love to share. There's so much more
yes,
that, you know, is left undone, but we can chip away at it from any time you want, because if it helps one person, we've accomplished our mission.
Amen. Thank you so much, Dr. Cynthia J. Hickman. And like I said, I have posted her information on the G's Power Hour Facebook page, and we're going to have her back as soon as we're able to. Thank you all for listening. This has been G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Be well, be safe, be blessed, and please remember, all real power comes from God. Take care.
He'll make it all right. God is able.
God is able.
Whatever you need.
Whatever you need.
He'll supply.
He'll supply.
Whatever is broken.
Whatever is broken.
He can fix it.
He can fix it.
No need to worry.
No need to worry.
He's alive.
He's alive.
Whole church, he'll make it all right.
I know.
He will.
He will.